Morning. I'm not going to tell you what degrees I have, except as necessary, so that's probably not going to come up. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the joy of Adar, the phrase specifically, Misha Nichnas Adar Marbim Besimcha. Anyone familiar with this phrase? You've heard about this phrase? There's a song, Misha, right? Misha Nichnas Adar Marbim Besimcha. When Adar begins, you're supposed to have joy, we're supposed to be happy. In Judaism in general, joy is very specific. It's usually not general, there's usually a particular cause for the joy. So I want to look at a little bit, what exactly is the joy that is associated with Adar? What is the basis for that joy? And is there some sort of greater purpose for that joy that we're supposed to be engaging in Adar? And we'll see that this relates to Pesach and Purim, and hopefully we'll be okay with the title by the end. So the first thing we have to deal with a little bit is to trace this phrase. Where does this come from? Is this just something someone came up with for a song? Where does the phrase Mishenichnas Adar Marbim Besimcha come from? And so the beginning of that discussion is source number one. This is a Mishnah in Masechet Ta'anit, which is talking about the polar opposite experience of Mishenichnas Adar. Mishenichnas Av, from the time when the month of Av begins, mimat in besimcha, we lower the level of joy that we have, we limit our joy, and that, of course, has to do with the experiences or the preparation, the days which lead up to Tisha B'Av. Those are the days, the 9 days, we stop to do things a little bit differently, we limit the amount of joy that we have. That's as far as we get in the Mishnah. The Gemara sort of expands this description, and we end up with not only Av, Mishenichnas Av Mematin Besimcha, but if you look in source number 2, Mishenichnas Av Mematin Besimcha, and then in the first line there, Amar Rav Yehuda, Brei de Rav Shmuel Bar Shilat, Mishmei de Rav, a very long chain of rabbinic tradition, Kishem Shem Mishenichnas Av Mematin Besimcha, just like the case is with Av, that when Av begins, we limit our joy. Kach mishenichnas Adar marbin besimcha. There, just so too, when Adar begins, you're supposed to increase your joy. You're supposed to have more joy. And there's an application made to, if you have court cases or some sort of litigation that you have to do, you should wait with non-Jews. You should wait until Adar. You shouldn't do it in Av because we have bad luck. You should do it in Adar. That's a whole other discussion which I don't want to deal with right now. But yes. Will that also include medical procedures? I don't know offhand. In theory, it might, but again, this is not a definitive statement that you should do this. And definitely, if you have a medical procedure, find out in advance. But I'm not. In theory, it might. It might apply as well. Okay, so the question I want to have, we have these polar sort of opposites. When Av starts, you are less happy. When Adar starts, you're supposed to be more happy. Why? What exactly is going on in Adar? I mean, we know what happened in Av that made us sad. What's going on in Adar that's making us happy? Any suggestions? Purim. Purim happens in Adar. Yeah, so that's what I would imagine, and today that's sort of the feeling that you always have. People start singing at the beginning of Adar, it's already in preparation for the celebrations of Purim, or in anticipation of the celebrations of Purim. Rashi, in terms of explaining this statement of Mishenichnas Adar, actually packages together Purim and Pesach. If you look in source number 3, that's what Rashi says. Mishenichnas Adar, Yemei Nisim Hayu LeYisrael, they were days of miracles for the Jews. Purim v'Pesach. Purim and Pesach are included together. Okay, so fine, that's not so crazy. We have Purim coming, we have Pesach coming somewhere beyond on the horizon. I'm sorry, but Rashi said it, not me. We have Pesach coming somewhere on the horizon. Adar, the beginning of Adar is here, so we have to start to be happy. There are two questions I want to ask about this statement in order to clarify exactly what's going on here. One question is, what exactly does the presence of Pesach and Purim do to prompt joy? In other words, why is it that because now Pesach and Purim are coming, we're supposed to be happy? Why is that occurring? And the way this is explained in source number 4 in the Beit HaBechira of the Meiri, before we read it inside, is that this is commemorative. This is a time of year where good things happen for the Jews. So that leaves its mark on that time of the year forever. It's a happy time of year for the Jews. And similarly, in contrast, Av is a time when many bad things happen for the Jews. Tisha B'Av especially is a time when many bad things happen for the Jews. So it's a bad time of year. And we're supposed to commemorate or react to the fact that it's a bad time of year. And that's what prompts the joy. That's what prompts the sadness. We're happy because it's a good time of year. There are days of miracles. This is what happened to the Jews. And we're sad during Av because it's a bad time of year. And we're supposed to sort of vary our approach to God, our approach to religious life. We're supposed to be sensitive to these things and react accordingly depending on the time of the year. And that is how the Meiri describes this in 4. In the Gemara, they explain that just as when Av begins, we limit joy, so too when Adar begins, we increase joy. All of this is a reminder that it's fitting to pray and thank God at each moment and every time in accordance with what occurred at that time. You're supposed to thank God based on what happens. You're supposed to be sensitive to the time of year. And that seems to be the idea of the Meir. So we're supposed to be happy. But there's an immediate question that sort of pops up. This is Adar, Rosh Chodesh Adar came. Okay, great. So I know Pesach and Purim are coming. So I'm really happy. What's the problem? When don't we do this?
When there's a double Adar.
When there's a double Adar. Okay, that's true. That's not exactly what I was getting at, but that's true. When don't we do this? Any other Yom Tov of the year. There's lots of other happy days in the year, right? There's Sukkot, there's Shavuot. We don't say Mishanichnas Siva, and you're supposed to start being happy. Mishanichnas Tishrei, you're supposed to start being happy. What? Mishanichnas Kislev, right? Chanukah is coming, you're supposed to be happy. What happened to all the other Yomim Tovim of the year? Why is it that specifically on Purim and Pesach for this combo that we're going to be happy, but never at any other time? That's a problem that you come up against if you're going to try and interpret this way. And that problem is responded to by Rabbi Yaakov Emdin in source number 5. Someone asked him this. It's a weird thing to ask. Usually in response literature, people ask halachic questions, serious halachic questions. Someone wrote Rabbi Yaakov Emdin and said, you know, I can't sleep at night. It was bothering me. Why did Rashi say Purim and Pesach? This was a serious crisis. Why did he say Purim and Pesach? Just say Purim. The beginning of Adar is when Purim is coming. Why do you have to say Purim and Pesach? And so Rav Yaakov Emdin said that Rashi had to say Purim and Pesach to respond to the question that we just asked. Why don't we have such a concept of being happy at the beginning of the month before Shavuot happens, before Sukkot happens, some other happy day of the year? And the answer is that this time is obviously especially strong in Simcha, or especially strong in miracles, because we have a double teaming. We have Purim and Pesach together. So it seems to imply before Purim happened, they wouldn't do this. But you had both of them together, Purim and Pesach, and that's what shows us that this is an exceptional time of the year. Just like Tisha B'Av is sort of the nexus for all the bad stuff that happens historically, this is a good time. Yeah.
Sorry if I'm taking you off the thruster.
No, that's fine.
The Mishinichmas Av Mimati Misimcha, and then we get, 6 days after Tisha B'Av, which I guess we all understand that part, but 6 days later you get Tu B'Av, which has this long list of good things that happen.
Right.
So is the Mimati Misimcha supposed to go for the entire month, when all these wonderful things did happen on Tu B'Av, or is Tu B'Av an exception to the rest of the month? Is it the beginning of the season? I mean, I know it's not really where you're going, but...
Right, so there is a bit of discussion about how Av works. This whole concept of the bad days, because it comes up practically if you're going to take the Gemara to task, and so you're not supposed to set up times.
As my friend here asked about people with medical procedures, I don't know about specifically Av, but people who are told that they're going to have some sort of procedure and it's going to be Bein HaMitzarim, during the 3 weeks, some people will go so far as to try to reschedule it.
Right. So I think usually I'm not totally sure exactly who says what, but there is a big discussion about splitting Av into two. It sort of becomes 2 months. If I'm not mistaken, it was the Chasam Sofer. Somebody said actually turns into 2 months. The first half is Av. The second half is Menachem Av. It has a different name. It's a new month. It transforms at some point, either it's right after Tisha B'Av or on halfway through the month or whatever, sort of turns into a new month. And all of that other stuff about not scheduling things and things like that sort of vanishes, and it becomes a different kind of mood. So I think that's usually how people address that particular issue. Okay, so we have so that we can, if we look at number five, this is where Rav Yaakov Emden answers this question. You asked why Rashi there in the Gemara of when the month of Adar begins to explain that there were days of miracles for Israel, Purim and Pesach. It seems obvious that he needed this because it referred to Purim alone. If he had referred to Purim alone, then we should say this also for the days of Nisan and Kislev. Why not? Why not have it for other times? Rather, you must say that this is because at this point there began days of miracles which were contiguous and next to each other. That's the idea. So the Rav Yaakov Emden says you have a double teaming, you have the 2 days next to each other, this is an exceptional time of joy, and therefore we have to react. So this is one way of looking at this whole story. Mi shenichnas Adar marbin besimcha, what does it mean? It means that just like in Av, there was an exceptionally bad time, and we need to react, we have to be sensitive to the time of the year. The things that happen historically at this time of year somehow have to have an impact on us. We have to be sensitive to that and react. So just like in Av, we need to be sad, so too in Adar, because we had Purim and Pesach together, it's obviously such an exceptionally happy time of the year, a time when God did miracles for us, that we have to react in a happy way. And that's one way of reading this. I don't want to call it the classic way of reading it, but this is one way of understanding this. Right, so yes, presumably what he means is they're really close together. They're within a month of each other. They're in a month, 1 month apart, so nothing else is really that close. I don't know about Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. I guess Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur are not happy days in this calculation. But yeah, you're right. It does split over into another month. Right.
Be happy for Adar, it says,
with Nichnas. Right. Well, yeah, the Adar part is arbitrary, just like the beginning of Av is arbitrary in this sense, right? Nothing happened on the first day of Av. But now that you're in the month, so we're close enough, and we start to get involved. So I wanted to suggest maybe a different way of understanding this whole thing, which is that we're not reacting to the time of the year, we're actually preparing. It's a preparatory act, the fact that we're becoming happy. And we'll do this through sort of analogy by looking at a different way of understanding Av, the whole concept of Misha Nichnas Av. And that is, we need to understand a little bit of background for that purpose about mourning, about Avelut. The Gemara, it's not on the sheets, but the Gemara differentiates between what's called Avelut Chadasha, new mourning, and Avelut Yishena, old mourning. New mourning is the mourning, the grieving that one does for a relative. A relative passes away, chas v'shalom, so then there's a process of mourning. That's called Avelut Chadasha. The Gemara also refers to the ancient mourning, the Avelut Yishena, the old one, which is about the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, the things that we mourn on a yearly basis that are part of our, you know, cycle of the year, ancient mourning. And there's distinctions between these two different types of mourning. We start to find them if we just look at the laws of mourning. So, for example, in source number 6, this is the Rambam. The Rambam describes that a person is not supposed to mourn exceptionally for an exceptionally long time over somebody who passes away. Al yit kasha adam al meto yeter midai. Person should not become excessively brokenhearted because of somebody's death. Shenemar al tivku lemeit val tanudulo. Don't weep for a dead person. Don't shake your head for him. Klomar yeter midai. That doesn't mean you shouldn't mourn at all. It means you shouldn't mourn excessively for too long. Shezeu min hago sheolam. The way of the world is that people die. We need to grieve, that's a reality, but you cannot grieve too much because hamitzar atzmo yoter al minhago shel olam hareza tipesh. Somebody who causes himself to grieve excessively over something which is, after all, in the end, the way of the world, is being foolish. Eleketzad yasa shlosha lebechi shiva lehesped shloshim yom letisporet ulishara chamisha dvar. So the prescribed pathway is to have 3 days for crying, 7 for eulogies, 30 days for the other practices of mourning. We should note that the Rambam himself, when his brother died, was mourning for much longer than that. But so he says this, but you know, there's probably some wiggle room there, historically speaking. But this is the idea. The idea in Avelut Chadasha is that it's caused, there's a natural sense that you have to grieve. I need to be sad. I'm going to be sad. There's no way that's not going to happen. And the question is cutting a balance. I'm going to grieve, but I can't grieve excessively because, after all, I need to function afterwards. Life has to continue after the death. But we also find in Avelut Chadasha that you don't really have these kind of limitations. Avelut Yeshena, rather. The mourning that we do for the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the mourning that we do to commemorate things, doesn't have these limits, because it doesn't have the same concern. There, I'm not sad. Right now, if I live in 2018, I don't feel sad about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash every day when I wake up in the morning. That's not a natural... I'm speaking for myself, I don't know about everybody else, but I don't feel that way. So in order to come to a sense of being sad, I need to work on myself. There has to be sort of an arousal of some sort of feelings of sadness, and in order to do that, we instituted different fast days and different practices to generate a feeling of sadness. And this is also expressed in source number 7 in the Rambam, Yesham Yamim Shekol Yisrael Mit'anim Behem Mipnei Atzarot She'iru Behem. There are days where all the Jews fast because of calamities, because of horrible things that have happened in our past. In order to arouse people's hearts and also to open the pathways to tshuva. The assumption is, in Avelut Yeshena, that something is fundamentally broken. Our relationship with God is broken. The temple was destroyed. Whatever the situations happen, there's a fundamental breach. And it's not a question of minhago shel olam, that, you know, you should just let it go. This is the way of the world. This is how it goes after all. When our relationship with God is broken, that's not something that you give up on. You have to maintain it. You have to continue to try and feel it on a consistent basis. And the time when this will go away is ultimately in the future, the days of the Mashiach. That's what the Rambam says in source number 8. So this is the distinction that we have. New mourning is mourning where I feel upset, you know, automatically. That's natural. And the process is to try and balance and deal with it in a healthy way and really confront it, but ultimately it gets less and less and less until it's gone. The Avelut Yeshena sort of has the opposite trajectory. I feel normal. I'm Adam Friedman today, doesn't feel sad about the Beis HaMikdash, maybe I should, but I don't feel that sad about it. But when I want to get to a state of mourning, I have to sort of, it's the opposite trajectory. I have to sort of work on myself to bring myself to a state where I feel upset, where I feel like I feel the mourning. And this is how Rav Soloveitchik explained the process that we have before Tisha B'Av. We have the 3 weeks, and we have the 9 days, and we have the week of Tisha B'Av, and it leads into Tisha B'Av itself. It's this process of making myself upset, an emotional preparation for the day of Tisha B'Av. And that's what you have here in source number 9. The Rav, that's Rav Soloveitchik, explained that there's a fundamental difference between Avelut Chadasha, new mourning, and Avelut Yeshena, the older mourning. When a close relative passes away, the grief, the pain, the sense of loss come naturally and easily. It is therefore most appropriate to begin the observances of Avelut with Shiva. In the case of Avelut Yeshena, on the other hand, this progression is out of place. We have become so used to living in a world without the Beit HaMikdash that it would be unfair to expect anyone to begin the 3 weeks with the observances of Shiva. It simply would be unnatural for anyone to suddenly break down and cry over the loss of the Beit HaMikdash. The sense of mourning for the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash can be internalized only through gradual increments, only by slowly increasing our observances of Elut from the 17th of Tammuz through the 9 days, while at the same time reflecting on the significance of this 3-week period, can we hope to approach the day of Tisha B'Av with the right frame of mind. By engaging in this 3-week learning experience, we prepare ourselves mentally so that, and I would add emotionally, so that when the day of Tisha B'Av finally arrives, we are ready to grieve appropriately. So this is how Rabbi Soloveitchik understands this. This is how he would explain the phrase, Misha Nichnas Av, Mema'atin Besimcha. What does it mean? We're not reacting. This is the key sort of difference here. We're not reacting to the sad time of year. It's not because it's a sad time of year and I need to feel sad because this is what I do as a sensitive religious person. It's that I know that there's a day coming when I'm going to have to relive a historical moment. I'm going to have to somehow access the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and feel an emotional connection to that. And that doesn't happen automatically. I can't just wake up in the morning on Tisha B'Av and say, oh, I'm sad now, and start crying. That's not going to happen. It's just not reasonable. It's not rational. It's not feasible that should occur. So Misha Nichnas Av Mematin B'Simcha means, since we're heading towards this reliving this historical experience, we have to prepare ourselves emotionally for that. So I wanted to suggest that if that's what Mishenichnas Av, Mematin Besimcha means, that I'm preparing for a moment of reliving some experience of sadness, that Mishenichnas Adar, Marbin Besimcha, which the Gemara sort of says is the mirror opposite, is the same thing. It's not that we're reacting to a happy time of year and you have to feel happy because historically there was joy. It's that we're heading towards 2 days, and we're going to quantify this, 2 days where we have to relive historical experiences, 2 holidays which are about reliving historical experiences, and you have to get involved with the emotion of that day. And in order to do that, just like you need to prepare for Tisha B'Av, you need to prepare yourself emotionally for Purim and for Pesach. That's the idea. That's Mishenichnas Adar, Marbin Besimcha. And the question that remains there is, what exactly does that mean? Why are we reliving? What does it mean that we're reliving experiences? So it's easier to see this in Pesach than it is in Purim. We'll start with Purim. There's a lot of discussion about in Purim about whether Purim is a commemoration. Is that the goal? We do all these things on Purim. We have a fast, and we read the Megillah, and we have a meal, and we're happy, and there's drinking, perhaps. That depends who you talk to. But is this about commemorating something that happened, or is there more of an experiential component to it as well? So I have a little bit of proof here. I'm not sure that it's that we're going to. I want to go into it because I don't know exactly how much time we have, but we'll suffice with half of the discussion here. So if we look at source number 12, source number 12 is a piece from Megillat Esther, and the discussion in Megillat Esther is. This is part of the description of the war that Bnei Yisrael had. They were fighting in Shushan, and they were fighting outside of Shushan. And the Megillah tells us that on the 13th day of the month of Adar, they were fighting. And everywhere else except for Shushan, they rested on the 14th day and made it a day of feasting and merrymaking. But the Jews in Shushan mustered. They were fighting on both the 13th day and the 14th days. And so they rested on the 15th day and made it a day of feasting and merrymaking. Okay, so outside of Shushan, they fought on the 13th, rested on the 14th. Inside Shushan, they fought on the 13th and 14th, rested afterwards. Great. The Talmud tries to figure out here, which it's in a separate kind of discussion, what days of the month can you read the Megillah? There's a whole discussion. You can maybe, depending on where you live, you read it on one day, read it on another day. And the Talmud says everybody agrees on the 13th day, no matter where you live, you can read the Megillah, because that was the day of Kihilah. That was the day when they got together and they were fighting and they were involved. That's when you read the Megillah. Okay. And the in 13, the She'iltot of Rav Chai Gaon is asking another question, which is the day that we have to have the fast of Esther. We know that there's this practice to have the fast of Esther at a certain point in the year. It's a little bit of a later, perhaps a later innovation. And he says, obviously, the fast of Esther has to happen on the 13th day, because the 13th day is when they fought the war, and when they were fighting the war, we must presume they were also fasting. They're fasting, and therefore we have it on the 13th day. So the reading of the Megillah, you can ask a military strategist whether you should be fasting while you're fighting a war. I don't know. But the Megillah is read on the 13th day for sure, because that was the day that they had this experience of the war. The fasting is done on the 13th day, because that was the day they actually fasted when the story of Purim happened. So what seems to emerge here, according to Rav Chai Gaon, and there are other indications of this as well, is that the story of Purim, what we do on Purim, is not just commemorative. To a certain extent, we're trying to re-experience what happened to the people in those times. We fast just like they fasted on the exact same day, and the fasting, just like their fast, had a war and it turned into a happy day on the following day. We fast on the 13th and then it turns into a happy day the following day. We read the Megillah, we have an experience of this joy that they experienced, and we're trying to reproduce that. And there's a whole discussion to be had about the themes, why exactly is Purim this way, but it's clear, it seems clear for many sources, that the idea of Purim is not just to commemorate, it's to experience the joy and the sort of emotional flip that happened to the Jews at the time of Purim. We find this more blatantly in terms of Pesach as well. This is something which we mention, it's an integral part of the Haggadah, which is in source 14, we don't have to read the whole thing, but Bechol Dor Vador, Chayav Adam Lirot et atzmo ki'ilu hu yatza mimitzrayim. In every generation, a person is required, they're responsible to see themselves as though they came out of Egypt. It's not just about remembering what happened. We somehow have to access that experience. It's a very interesting thing that's being demanded, but we have to access the experience and feel a sense of being freed from Egypt, whatever exactly that means. But I think this is the point. And perhaps this is what Rashi meant initially as well, that we have Misha Nichnas Adar Marbim Besimcha. The idea is that when Adar comes, we have to recognize we have these two holidays on the way, which I think are unique in this regard, Purim and Pesach, where the goal of the holiday is not just to be happy, to remember something that happened in the past, but to try and relive an experience of something that existed in the past again. And in order to do that, just like in Tisha B'Av, it's unreasonable to expect someone to suddenly be sad on Tisha B'Av, it's unreasonable to expect of ourselves to wake up in the morning on Purim and suddenly be happy, or to sit down at the Seder with no preparation and suddenly relive the experience of leaving Egypt. That requires careful thought, some kind of emotional preparation. We have to think about what this means. Think about the story, think about how it might have an impact on our lives, how it's had an impact on the Jewish people throughout history, and other ways, and try and prepare ourselves for that moment. Just like we have the physical preparations for these holidays, Misha Nichnas Adar, Marbin Besimcha, means that there has to be an emotional preparation as well. So hopefully this is it's a good time to start thinking about this, because Rosh Chodesh Adar is just coming up this week. We can get a little bit of a head start on it, of thinking about how we can prepare emotionally for the days of Purim and Pesach that are to come. Thank you. Yes.